Okay. If we're right to start, welcome to the BlackRock Teleconference. I'd like to thank BlackRock for hosting. My name is Jeff Ho, the Manager of Research Analysts at the FPAS Research Team, and I'd like to introduce Dr. Mike Macquarie. He's the Managing Director of the Scientific Active Equity Team. He's been at BlackRock for 15 years and originally at Barclays. Today's topic is called, Is It Time to Do Something Differently? And we'll talk about long-short investing. BlackRock will be presenting two of their award-winning strategies that each use a long-short equity alpha equity engine for alpha generation. No doubt the awards they've won are for posting some rather impressive returns. So they've packaged one product as a market-neutral strategy, which is something that the research team is considering for the alternatives asset class. It's a reasonably simple to understand strategy and reasonably simple to explain to clients. It has high liquidity and has produced some decent returns. The Beta 1 strategy is the second strategy. That's an Aussie share market beta. They've added Aussie share market beta to the alpha engine, and it competes against other long-only Aussie share managers. Now, this product is approved and on wrap platforms, and the market neutral strategy, while it's approved, it's on all wrap platforms except for North. But expect that in the coming weeks. I'd like to now pass to Dr. Macquarie to talk about the strategy and solutions, and we'll take questions at the end. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the call today. We've got a lot to talk about, so I'll try to keep it interesting in moving through the materials. If you have the presentation deck in front of you, if you would turn to slide 4, we'll talk about the spectrum of investing encompasses passive to high alpha strategies. By passive, we're talking about index. And with an index fund, we're trying to match the performance of a certain benchmark. We use full replication for our index funds. It's self-rebalancing, and it has very tight tracking error to the index. But with an index fund, as you well know, you're fully reliant on the market. There's no manager skill or potential insights where we're trying to add over and above that. We're merely trying to replicate as tightly as possible that index. If you move up the risk spectrum to long-only investing, let's just say we're looking at stock levels of plus or minus 3%. We've moved into active space. We're looking for higher returns with similar levels of risk to an index. But the long-only constraint makes it difficult. I'm going to spend a little bit of time trying to really make this real and tangible in this conversation. That long-only constraint is material, particularly in Australia with a high concentration. For our investment strategy, our process, you lose about 40% of your information before you've even started the process. If you move to long-short investing, again, say you have plus or minus 3% active positions, the short positions allow you to implement both your positive and now your negative views on a stock. But it also allows us, as I'll show you in a few slides, it allows you to take on more risk without introducing undesirable risks into your portfolio. It allows us to be much more efficient in terms of capturing alpha. So in our view, if you're looking for high alpha strategies and you want the consistency of that alpha, moving to long short is a very logical place to move. If we would move over to slide 5, ASX all lowers from 89 to current. You see the red line there, 4.5% capital growth per annum over that 20 plus years, 3.6% inflation. If you look at that from beginning to end, you can say, hey, that looks not that dissimilar to cash, but with a lot of volatility in there. The big run-up from 2003-04 through the peak in 07-08, massive and disproportionate run, as you can see on that chart, but then it fell away tremendously, then up again, then sideways, then a bit down and bit up. The bottom line is that it's been pretty flat with huge vol for the past several years. So if you're looking for cash with a lot of volatility, we've lived it over the last couple decades here in Australia. the old way of doing things may not be working so well anymore. If you look at the chart, $1,000 invested in the broad ASX market, over on the right-hand side, you can see we're still well below the peak back in 07. I'm sorry, slide 6. Thank you, Ben. On slide 6, you can see that $1,000 invested, we're well below the peak. And in fact, if you look at where that dollar value invested would be, it's pretty flat of where we were 5-plus years ago in the market. So $1,000 invested in a broad index in Australia hasn't gotten you anywhere over the last 5 years, but has done it with a whole lot of volatility. So last slide on context, slide 7, portfolios must be more dynamic. So if we look at the traditional mix of stocks and bonds, here's an indicative one that we've put together. A typical balanced, long-only combination of funds. Australian equities 30%, international equities 20%, alts 10%. An interesting fact of this, and I'm sure you're all aware of, is that with 50% of your allocation to equities, that typically translates into over 95% of the risk. Over 95% of the realized volatility in the portfolio is going to come from that equity component. If you're using traditional long only, the big beta moves really drive that. So whilst you look at this portfolio and we say, hey, it's well diversified, it's well balanced, in terms of capital allocation it is, but in terms of risk, it's not. So one of the questions that we keep being asked and keep discussing with our clients is, how do you get better return per unit of risk? And that's what we're all trying to do, I think, for our clients, is consistency of return with nice return per unit risk categories. That leads us at BlackRock to come to two conclusions. One, you can utilize market neutral more often. You got that 10% alt bucket, maybe you put more into that, but utilizing market neutral, getting away from that 95% dominance in equity risk and getting into something that's market neutral, directionless in terms of risk, or for the component that is in equities, target higher alpha from the equity allocation. And our view on how to do that is you need to relax that long-only constraint if you're going to get higher alpha with more consistent returns. So that's our conclusion for slide 7. If we move to slide 8, something I'm sure you are all very familiar with, here's the top 10 stocks in the ASX 200. The BHP down to Rio, 10 stocks there. It's only the top handful of stocks in Australia where you can add value on both sides in a long-only portfolio. So long-only investing in Australia, if you want to express both positive and negative views, you can only do it in the top handful of stocks. Let's look at ANZ there. Let's call it 7%. The weight in the benchmark is 7%. And let's stick with the plus or minus 3% we mentioned earlier. So if it's 7% of the benchmark weight and you're in a long-only portfolio, if you love it, you're going to hold 10%. If you hate it, you're going to be 3% underweight, you're going to hold 4%. You've got the range, you've got the flexibility, but you've only got the flexibility in the top handful of stocks in Australia. If you move down to the 10th largest stock, you see Rio there. It's about 2% benchmark weight. Okay, if you love it, you can go up to 5. If you hate it, well, you can't even get a 3% underweight there. If you don't like that stock, you don't hold it. You're only 2% underweight. We haven't even moved out of the top 10 stocks yet, and we're already hitting up against this constraint in Australia. It's incredibly binding. So if you flip over to slide 9, it just gets worse from there. Right? You start moving outside that top 10. So here we've got the top 30 stocks. Once you get down to news on the right, the 30th stock there, it's about 0.7 of 1%. call it 70 basis points. So for that stock, if you loved it, you want to be 3% overweight relative to your benchmark. In a long-only portfolio, you're going to hold 3.7%. But if you hate it, the only thing you do is not hold it. And by not holding it, you have 0.7% underweight in that in your portfolio. It really starts to limit how you can reflect your negative views on a stock. And if you're a stock picker, what you want to do is be able to say, I like this stock relative to that stock. Our style, to be very clear, as many, many managers out there, we have relative stock views. We're trying to pick one stock relative to another to add alpha for our clients, as opposed to picking absolute directions and absolute levels of stock. So if you're doing that, it becomes very difficult to add value relative to the benchmark. Slide 9. I apologize for slide 9 because there's a whole lot more on this slide that I would like to say that we didn't put in the chart, and I'll just talk about it. Slide 9 tries to bring this alive for you in terms of the ability to add alpha. Okay. Here are four stocks: Qantas, JB Hi-Fi, Fairfax, and Billabong. We've got the benchmark weight as of 31st of August. 35 basis points, 14, 17, and 7. Well-known names in the marketplace. Those are the benchmark weights. What's the 12? Oh, sorry, slide 10. That's what you guys are saying. Okay. I'm getting hand signals like 10. I thought I'm 10 minutes into it, which was slide 10. Okay, we're on slide 10. Thank you very much. So again, slide 10, we got four stocks. We've got their weight in the benchmark. Over the last 12 months, how have they performed? Not very good. All right, so 12-month performance, minus 27, minus 38, minus 50, minus 50. If you held them at index weight, you're an index fund, what do? Well, the 12-month attribution is minus 25 basis points. Okay, that's if you held it at benchmark weight. Suppose you're a long-only manager, and 12 months ago you said, I hate these four stocks. I don't want them in the portfolio. So instead of holding them at 35, 14, 17, and 7 in your portfolio, it's zero. What have you added by that insight? That would have been absolutely brilliant stock picking. These stocks are terrible. I hate them. I don't want them in my portfolio. What have you added to the portfolio? You've added 25 basis points. A brilliant call, set of calls, on four stocks that tanked, and you got 25 basis points for your portfolio. Not that exciting. Good, fantastic, but the long-only constraint killed you. Now suppose that you were able to 3% underweight those. A year ago, you had made the call, I hate these four stocks, I want to be 3% underweight these stocks. What's a negative 3% holding mean that you've added to the portfolio? It's about 500 basis points. It's about 5% to your portfolio. So if you had made that call, and this is just indicative, we're not saying this was our call. Let me be very, very clear. I would have loved to be sitting here and saying, hey, we made this call, and wasn't that great? This is indicative, but it's just trying to make it real that long-only constraint, the exact same call, the exact same views on those four stocks. In the long-only portfolio, you could have made 25 basis points for a client. In the long-short context, you could have made 500 basis points for your clients. That's the long-only constraint doing its diabolical worst for you. Okay? And that's kind of the key when we start thinking about relaxing the long-only constraint, is how can we reflect both sides of our views? Slide 11 says, what is short selling? I assume everybody knows what short selling is, but just very quickly, short selling, very simplistically, is just reversing the order of buying and selling. The old adage, buy low and sell high, still applies. You want to buy stocks when they're cheap and sell them when they're expensive. That's fine if stocks are going up. Buy them today, stocks rally, and you sell them later and you make money. But what if your view is the stock price is going down? Sell first. Let the stocks fall. Buy them back later. You're still buying low and selling high. You just reverse the order in which you borrow, which you buy and which you sell. So short selling, very simply, you borrow a stock from a securities lender, long-established practice. There's lots of high-quality sec lenders in the Australian marketplace. So you borrow the stock, you sell it on the open market, you pay a rental fee, call it maybe half a basis point per annum to borrow that stock. If there's any dividends, they get that paid out as well. If the stock falls, you buy it back on the open market for a lower price, and you've profited the difference between what you sold it for, a higher price, and what you bought it back for, a lower price, minus any the cost of borrow over that period of time. And here's just an example with Aquarius Platinum over the past year. We all know what that did, and it wasn't real pretty. If we move to slide number 12 is another way of trying to put it together for you, and hopefully this might be useful with your clients. Here we have, over on the left-hand side, plus and minus 3%. Those are active positions. So we think about this relative to an index called the ASX 200. So you've got the stocks ranked on the horizontal axis from 1, that says 181, but there's top 200 stocks. So stock number 1 would be the largest capitalization stock in the market, right down to the lowest cap stock in the market, stocks 1 to 200. The blue line up the top is the maximum overweight, plus 3%. We love it. If we really hate the stock, the yellowy-orange line at minus 3% shows stocks we don't like. The bars there, the red bars that go above 0 and below 0, show the active positions, stocks we like, stocks we don't. And it's kind of balanced across the capital spectrum, taking positions in large cap stocks and positions in small, mid cap, small cap, right across the spectrum. Now that green line, that dark green line that starts cutting in there, as we talked about a few slides ago, it's only the top handful of stocks where you can go 3% overweight and underweight. So it's the 3% that kicked in. So the ANZ example, if we loved it, we can go from 7 to 10. If we hate it, we go from 7 to 4. You got full flexibility. You're constraining. You're deciding, I don't want to be more than 3%. So you're imposing that constraint on yourself for risk control purposes. But once you start getting down to stock 10 and below, that long-only constraint starts cutting in. You can't implement your negative views on the stock. And News Corp, they're around stock 30, as we talked about before. You can see where it kicks in. So all the positions above that green line you can put on in a long-only portfolio. All the positions below that green line you cannot put on in a long-only portfolio. So by relaxing that long-only constraint, you've got the full spectrum of positions that you can put on. Okay, why do we care? Well, we care for several different reasons, and one of them is alpha, expressing both sides of the view. But it's even worse than that. On the next slide, on slide 13, we try to show that it also comes into play in terms of how it impacts your risk. If you can implement both long and short positions in the large cap stocks, but you can only implement long positions in the small cap stocks, you have to be really careful you're not creating portfolio distortions and going long a bunch of small cap stocks and underweight a bunch of large cap stocks to keep it cash neutral. So what do we have here? We have here on slide 13 up at the top, long short active positions. There's some indicative positions in a portfolio. You see you're going overweight and underweight. The keen observer may notice that over on the right-hand side, as you start getting down the small cap spectrum, the positions are a little bit smaller in that. That can be attributed to market liquidity, the trading activity, trading volume, your ability to trade into and out of the stocks are a little bit more restrictive because of the volumes that you can trade in those smaller cap stocks. But it's pretty balanced across the spectrum. If you look at the long portfolio and the short portfolio, you're taking the same positions on both sides. If you now go to long-only active positions, what becomes very clear is you can take A lot of positions over on the left-hand side. There's your long positions and your short positions. But you can see where the market cap bites. And those short positions are truncated by the long-only constraint. You also start taking fewer and fewer active positions as you move down the capital spectrum, because you don't want to create this large cap versus small cap bet in the portfolio. You're working really hard to create a market neutral portfolio, and you let something as simple as a large cap versus small cap bet creep its way in your portfolio, it can blow you out of the water and destroy all the hard work that you've done on controlling risk. So not only do you lose out because of the long-only constraint on implementing your short position, your short information gets lost, but you also, it becomes very hard to stay risk balanced, and it restricts your positions that you're going to take in small caps. Again, as I said before, 40% of your information in our investment process is lost through the long-only constraint. Slide 14. If we think about market neutrality of alpha, we can think about having market neutral positions relative to benchmark, the beta one position, or we can think about it in terms of market neutral relative to cash. But the key is making sure that the active positions that we have are market neutral. And so when we look at this, when I use the term market neutral, I'm not talking about cash neutral. I'm not talking about the dollar overweights and the dollar underweights balance out. I'm not even talking about necessarily in a market neutral strategy that it's beta neutral. That's one dimensional. So cash is a dimension, beta is a dimension. What we're trying to show in slide 14 is that the active exposures across various aggregations of risk, of industries, helps keep us market neutral. Thinking about risk across 20-odd dimensions is going to give you a much better set of risk controls than just focusing on cash neutrality or beta neutrality. So the chart shows your active exposures aggregated by a set of risk factors. If you're familiar with BARA, you can think about the BARA factors. Okay? Think about the BARA risk factors 1 to 8 there. You can think about industries. Think about GICS or whatever your favorite industry classification is. Think about industry factors. And what we're trying to do is make sure that we're not taking any really big incidental positions across these things. And I think if you think about it as the light blue bars are the long portfolio and the dark blue bars are the short portfolio, you see that you're pretty balanced out. You know, it's cash neutral, it's beta neutral, but also across these many dimensions, you're having much higher levels of accuracy around risk and keeping it market neutral. And that's key for us. So bringing this section together, wrapping it all up, kind of a punchline slide for us, is on slide 15. The result. You have active return on the vertical axis. You've got active risk on the horizontal axis. How do you get high alpha? If you want 6, 8, 10% alpha, you're going to have to take risk to get that. But if you look at the long-only line, the dark green line, because that long-only constraint binds, the more active risk you throw at the portfolio, the larger positions you have to take. And the larger positions you have to take, the more tightly, the more often you're butting up against that long-only constraint. It binds, and it binds more as you go up the active risk spectrum. So, yeah, for each unit of incremental risk you're taking on, you're getting less and less incremental alpha in a long-only portfolio. Relaxing that constraint gets you up to that solid orange line. It's not the dotted line. The dotted line is the theoretical one, but we know there's a cost to borrow. You know, that half a basis point, I mean half a percent per year indicative example of borrow costs means it's not that perfect straight line up there, long short, but it's still pretty darn steep. And so if you wanted to get 8% alpha, and you want to do it with 6 to 8% risk, through our investment process, you need to relax that long-only constraint to give yourself a chance to get there. So that's the section on long-short that we want to talk about. I'll briefly cover off how do we think about it. How do we build a strategy around that? That's section 2. What do we do with this long-only constraint? Our investment philosophy is around total performance management. return, risks, and costs. We simultaneously need to manage these three components on slide 17. Systematically explore market inefficiencies that have been validated by our research team. 30 individuals full-time doing research across Europe, the Americas, and Asia-Pac. Controlling risks, being very cognizant of transactions costs, particularly in mid and small cap stocks in Australia. You ignore that at your own peril. Slide 18 is our investment philosophy. It's all about people, investment insights, knowledge, research. Active investing is a people business. It's about the quality and rigor that those investment professionals bring to a process. The technology or some of the quantitative aspects help implement the investment insights. But the people's insights aren't any good. If the insights are rubbish, it doesn't matter what the quant techniques are. You're going to be embedding rubbish. It's about people. It's a people business. The technology helps remove some of the emotion, helps process data and turn that into information for us so we can create intelligent portfolios. You combine those and you get some pretty good outcomes. There on slide 18, you see the fundamental log of active management. This is a truism. I'd love to talk about it, but in the interest of time, we're going to skip over primarily, but we're going to say that whether you're a fundamental high conviction manager, whether you're a CTA, whether you're an active fixed income manager or equity manager, this is a truism. Your risk-adjusted returns are a function of your skill, the quality of your insights, the breadth, how many independent positions do you put on per annum, and your efficiency. Efficiency, in this case, we've been talking about the long-only constraint. That's the biggest one when we're talking about Australian equities. But there's lots of other constraints that can impede your ability to get your insights in the portfolio. You want to maximize your skill, breadth, and efficiency. Slide 19 shows our investment process. Our investment process starts with the ideas. I'll talk about a few of those in a minute. Signal construction, how do we take data and create forecasts from it. Then we rank stocks. Portfolio construction is about bringing together returns, risks, and transactions costs. We put the trades on, and there's a feedback loop. How's performance gone? How are we doing with those investment insights? We refine those investment insights. It's circular. The circular is very important because you have to keep learning. You have to keep evolving and adapting. Things that worked 10 or 15 years ago in the market may not work at all today or may work far less well. You have to keep doing the research, keep innovating to keep delivering alpha for our clients. Slide 20 gives you a sense of what ideas drive our positions. Five categories there: relative value, earnings quality, analyst expectations, market signals, and timing. Every one of the insights that we're using in the portfolio is logical, can be categorized as fundamental investment insights. We start with relative value. It's a great anchor point. It's a great point to begin analyzing a portfolio. Here we're using things like forward-looking and trailing earnings to price, book to price, residual income models, enterprise valuation models. Things that give us a handle on the relative valuation of stocks. It's key here to remember you've got to be comparing things like with like in a broad sense. You can think about that in a simple framework in terms of think about the four major banks relative to each other. But it's relative valuation. How does this individual stock that I'm analyzing compare on a price basis to its peers? But we know, we're all investors here, and we all know that something can look cheap for a reason. It can be a dog, and you have to take that next step, say earnings quality. How does a stock look? Let's rip the financials apart and look at and assess every stock in the universe on sustainability of earnings. All right, and there's different ways through accruals and so forth that you can prop up earnings for short periods of time, but eventually it tends to catch up. And so we want to have a view, a robust view on, yeah, it looks cheap, but hey, you know, we're starting to get quality of earnings, maybe it looks questionable. Then take the next step, analyst expectations, forward-looking forecast of earnings amongst other things. What we do is we go out to the top dozen sell-side analyst firms on a daily basis, and we pull in information from headline sales right down to bottom-line earnings. And we create our own robust earnings forecast. Rather than having four or five analysts sitting here in the office with BlackRock and me trying to convince you that they're the best analysts in the marketplace, we use all the sell-side analysts out there. We pull it in, and we process it. We've been doing this in Australia for 15 years now. And what we know from that experience is we can create more robust forecasts than any individual analyst by themselves. We can understand which analysts are leaders, which ones are following on average or at a point in time, first mover versus lagger in terms of that, which brokers, which analysts have more influence through a clientele effect or impact on the market. And we create these robust forecasts by pulling in and processing lots of information. That's really important to us. We need robust, forward-looking views. Market signals. Management and market behavior can influence stock price. Before the GFC, some people are like, yeah, how much can it? To the GFC, I don't think anybody questions this anymore. We know sentiment can move markets in huge ways and in very short and sharp. So being on top of market sentiment, both at the macro and the stock-specific level, is really important to an investment process. And timing, theme and sector timing, understanding where we are in an investment cycle, interactive effects between forward-looking growth aspects and timing, sentiment, it all comes together, all five of these factors, to rank stocks. I've got two specific examples here I'll run through quickly. There's a lot we could talk about, but very simply, text mining. We have a team of world-class individuals. So I'm slide 21 here. Text mining, extracting sentiment from brokers. We've got a team of individuals in our San Francisco office, extracted out of Silicon Valley, that are absolute world-class in terms of natural language processing. And they've taken the things that we as investors have been doing for the last several years and taken it a couple steps up. And there's a lot of ways, a lot of written text. There's reams and reams of it, thousands and thousands of emails and stuff that we get bombarded with per annum, that you need an army of individuals sitting there reading it and saying, well, I think it was positive sentiment for the stock or negative. Being able to systematically process that information, extract sentiment from written text in terms of reams of things that are non-core pieces of communication, gives us helpful information that helps us get out in front of some of their broker changes in their earnings forecasts. And here we have a very simple example for Aquarius Platinum. We used it before in terms of we know what happened with the stock price. But there was lots of sentiment, negative sentiment being out there long before there's a change in the buy recommendation for many analysts. They just stuck with the buy recommendation in spite of the fact that they're like trying to get pretty edgy in some of their written and email commentaries. So trying to get out in front of changes in the marketplace. Same thematic here in terms of web search frequency. Trying to get out in front of reported sales and therefore trying to get out in front of analyst changes in terms of forecasts based on reported sales. So if you can contemporaneously know that certain brands, that the broad consumer base is increasing search frequency for a particular product, and that product maps back to a brand and a stock, knowing that is helpful. And so we're going to take that across. It's a massive mapping exercise that we've done globally, mapping thousands of brands back to the parent company, so that we can be monitoring when there's a positive uptick in terms of interest in that and a decrease as well. And that does help us get out in front of reported sales, which lags, and even the what the analysts are doing. And that's slide 22 there. Okay, so we create these forecasts. What do we do with them? Slide 23 is a two-stock example, Paladin and Caltex. For Paladin, we've got four out of the five forecast categories. And there's call it 5 or 6 underlying insights within each one of these little buckets or categories. But 4 or 5 of the categories are negative for Paladin, 3 of the 5 are positive for Caltex. These, we bring these together in a stock ranking. You think about it as a forecast of return. We put it together with a forecast of risk and a forecast of transactions cost. We optimize the and create an optimal portfolio. And there's the active position holdings on the right. 2% Caltex, -3% Paladin. Okay? Kind of how it flows through. So what do I want you to take away from this? 3 things to remember. You need to form a fundamental view on every stock. That's what we're trying to do. Fundamental views on every name in the universe. We use technology to implement the views more efficiently, processing information, and processing data and turning it into information. And that the 12 people on the investment team, we've got them in the appendix, 12-person team, very well resourced with lots of experience in the Australian marketplace. All right. Final section is a little bit about performance. We have 2 strategies here. As mentioned, the Beta 1 version, which we call the on slide 26, the BlackRock Australia Equity Opportunities Fund. So slide 26, that's the Beta 1 version. We'll talk about that first, and we'll talk about the market neutral version. It aims to deliver 8% above the benchmark, the ASX 200. To deliver 8% alpha above, you have to relax that long only constraint. So it's a partial long short strategy. Strategy has been around for a decade. How have we done? There's the calendar year-by-year summary there. You can see the 8% alpha target on slide 27, and that we're into the 11th year, and 9 out of these 11 have been positive alpha years. And 2008, which was a pretty disruptive year in financial markets, is down a little over 6% in alpha space. Okay, that's a nice chart, but what about a little bit more detail? That's slide 28. We have the outperformance or the alpha on the top line, the benchmark, what has the ASX 200 done, and then the gross performance, the total return of the fund. If you go on that gross line all the way over to the right since inception, the strategy has delivered 16.5% per year since inception, while the benchmark has done about 7% per annum, or 9.5% above the benchmark. So we've beat our 8% alpha target by 1.5%. You can see the 1, 3, 5, and since inception alpha numbers. Down at the bottom in blue, the blue says net performance of BAEOF. That's the retail feeder fund that we launched last year, last September, in its performance. So it's done just about 17% since its launch a year ago. Okay, so that's the difference between the top part of the chart. It's the fund that's been around for a decade, and then the retail feeder that we launched a year ago. What can you do with it? Well, hopefully slide 29 is compelling. You have 2 things, risk, return. We know we're trying to deliver the best return per unit of risk. So we're trying to deliver 8% above. We delivered 9.5% per annum since inception. Here we look at, for the last 3 years, what does total risk look like? Well, the key thing is because of the positions. Because the positions are really work hard to keep them neutral to the beta. The alpha, the active positions, are independent of the beta. You're taking on very small incremental risk relative to the benchmark. So the Mercer Long Only Media Manager Survey is there on the orange or yellow, whatever that color is. The blue is a very small incremental risk. But how have we done relative to those managers? We've delivered a whole lot more alpha. So you can get a whole lot more return for a very little incremental risk. Slide 30 is another way of looking at that. This is the Mercer survey as comparison across the entire Australian share universe. 140 stocks over the last year. Second best performing fund. You see the dot there, the red block. So you've got the different percentiles and where this fund rates. And you can see it's well above the 95th percentile over every period. It's second, first, second, fourth, and first over all those time periods. Okay. A very little bit on the market neutral version. The market neutral version is cash plus 8%. We call it BlackRock Australia Equity Absolute Return Fund. That's the market neutral version. 532, it shows we're into the 12th year for that. 10 out of 12 positive years in terms of the strategy. And the more detailed slide on 33. Again, if you look at the go to the gross line and since inception, 16.1% total return. Remember, this isn't getting a kicker from the ASX. This is just cash plus. So the cash benchmark's done about 5%. We've done about 11% above cash per annum since 2001 when it was launched. This strategy was only launched back at the end of April, so it has a much shorter time period, but it's running generating some very positive alpha, 3.64% between end of April and end of August. Now, the next two slides, 34 and 35, a very, very simple point. Slide 34 says the market neutral strategy by construction, design, and meticulous risk control has very low or negative correlation with other market betas your clients will have in their portfolio. And therefore, it blends very nicely, or should typically blend very nicely with the portfolio. That's the point of the low correlation, slide 34. 35 gives three examples, portfolio one, portfolio two, portfolio three. A growth, a neutral, a defensive portfolio of categories there, Australian cash, bonds, Intel equity, and Australian equities. You see the weights and so forth. If we add in the equity market neutral, an allocation to that, that's the bottom set of charts, replace alt in there, putting in the equity market neutral at 10, 15, or 20%, the chart over on the right-hand side, every red dot there has a corresponding blue dot. And for every one of those, what it's saying is, by blending this market neutral strategy, if you had done this over the last decade, you would have had higher returns with lower risk. Okay? It's adding a genuine return source that is uncorrelated with the other assets and blends nicely. So, there's the research house ratings. I won't talk about that. Let me jump to slide 36 and wrap it up so we have time for questions. I'm sorry, slide 38. So the ability to add alpha depends on the skill and your method of implementation. The long-only constraint makes that very difficult. Relaxing that frees you up to take two-sided views on stocks with better risk control. It also allows you to target much higher alpha than you can in a long-only world. So we think the time is right for long-short investing. It's not new, but it's a really important tactic to employ to get more alpha for our clients. And so with that, I'll end it back.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mike. So Operator Jason, we'd like to now open to questions, if you don't mind.
Ladies and gentlemen, yes, I'm here. If you have a question, ladies and gentlemen, please press star 1 on your phone. If you'd like to withdraw your question, please press star 2.
Okay, while we're waiting for questions, I might like to ask a question. So looking at the equity market neutral strategy, the absolute return fund, if we're looking at that in an alternative section of the portfolio, have you done some analysis on how you'd expect it to blend with global macros and commodity trading funds?
Yes. So because of the design of the strategy being market neutral, in our experience we've looked at broad sectoral, CTA, macro, fixed income, long, short, different categories of it, and this strategy tends to have very low, sometimes negative correlation with those other alt-type strategies. The design is to have no correlation with them. statistically, it's unusual to have any correlation with those categories of alts.
Okay, great. Well, that's useful. Jason, is there any questions?
There are no questions at this time.
Okay, I'll ask another question. Looking at the returns, the return profile, I can see in 2008 it did have a negative year, but how would you expect it to perform in, let's say, a sustained bull market or a sustained bear market, the both strategies?
The alpha component should hold up well in either a bull or a bear market. We have a slide that we didn't put in there that shows the hit rate in up markets, the hit rate meaning how many months have we delivered positive alpha, and then in down market, equity market months, how frequently it's delivered. The frequency is somewhere around 75% for both. So whether markets are going up or whether markets are going down, the percentage of time that we're adding alpha is about the same. So sustained bulls or bears, the alpha component tends to hold up very well. The difference in return will be whether the client decides to be in the beta zero or the beta one strategy, and the difference there being is, does the equity market outperform cash as the underlying factor there.
Okay, thank you. Jason, any updates on questions?
No, sir, no questions at this time.
Okay, one final question from me. We saw in the GFC there was some problems with some stocks and some sectors not being able to be shorted. How would the strategy handle this situation?
If we go back to September 08, we had the snap short selling ban. The way it was implemented was that you couldn't put on any new short positions. So we had a long short portfolio, but every time we rebalanced that, if we made money on the shorts or long, and we had to effectively, you couldn't put on new short positions, so your exposures over time diminished. You couldn't keep refreshing your ideas in that environment, and it became very difficult. Thankfully, the short selling ban went away for most of the assets. The financials stayed on for a longer period of time, but that is an environment where it's difficult to add alpha or to have the appropriate amount of active risk in the portfolio that you would want long term. But given that environment of heightened volatility, it probably makes sense to be reining in your risk anyway.
Great. Thank you. And Jason, are there any further questions?
No, sir. No questions at this time.
Okay. Well, we might wrap it up there. And I'd like to thank Dr. Mike McCorry. I'd like to also add that the products, the BlackRock Australian Equity Opportunities Fund, that's the Beta 1 strategy, that's actually on PCARE and AXA North, and it's approved and on those platforms. The BlackRock Australian Equity Absolute Return Fund, that's the market neutral strategy, that's yet to be put on the platform. It is approved, but waiting on platform availability. Now, both these strategies are on Definitive Wrap, and they're not yet available on flexible super platforms, and they're well rated, so you can pull out the research reports from Van Eyck. The market neutral strategy has a rare AA rating from Van Eyck. So if for further information, please contact BlackRock. Or you can look at those research reports. And once again, thank you to BlackRock for hosting.
Thank you very much. Appreciate everybody's attendance.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect and have a great day.